How many times have our patients returned to our office and are just stuck in the cycle of chronic inflammation? We throw everything we have at them, nothing changes, and even our dentists are frustrated. Rather than throwing our hands up and shrugging, we need to be turning to PerioTrace by PerioProtect. I have seen the evidence firsthand and have helped so many hygienists find this resource because it really works, which is why there are so many products on the market now trying to imitate them. The results are speaking for themselves, but rather than going with an unproven product, stick with the only periodontal medicine delivery system cleared by the FDA. And not only that, but their support team is seriously among the best I've ever encountered, from the education to implementation to support when there's the inevitable bumps on the road. They are there for you. If you want to get in contact with them to learn more about how you can treat your patients better, head over to perioprotect.com/RDH. And on that site, at the bottom is a contact form that you can fill out or simply email them directly to ask for help. This is one thing I truly believe should be in every dental practice. perioprotect.com/RDH to stop the cycle of chronic inflammation.
Welcome back to episode 16 of A Tale of Two Hygienists with Michelle and Andrew. Hi, Andrew.
Howdy.
Howdy. Yeah. What have you been doing?
Well, we just had a different interview that we recorded today from someone from Texas. So I figured, howdy.
Any chance you're going to say y'all?
No.
I don't know why you have such an aversion to y'all. It is a word.
No. It's not.
Is it just because I say it and you just don't want to give it credit?
You remember when you were back in like second grade and you learned about contractions, like two words becoming one?
Yeah, that's you a, all that's a y'all, is y'all.
Y'all.
You all. It is a contraction. Y'all.
Okay. All right.
Anyway, are you enjoying this daylight savings time?
I am. You know, it's no, actually I'm not. I lied.
I was going to say, who enjoys losing an hour?
Yeah. No, it was not a good day. I slept in a little bit late and it has been rainy and, well, it's the Pacific Northwest. It's always rainy, but I just, been just kind of hanging out all day long.
All right. Well, this is, it's sometimes a little somber day for me. On a few weeks ago on our Facebook page, I posted another podcast that my pastor does called A Pastor with No Answers. And it was my friend Liz who was retelling her story of the day her husband died in a car accident. And this is the day 4 years ago.
Oh,
so
no.
It's always a little bit of a somber day. This isn't the date. The date is actually on Friday, but this was the day. Like it was Sunday after church. And so it always is it's a little sad to like reflect back on what you – like this moment 4 years ago, like you were in just utter shock and – your heart was ripped out. Mm-hmm. It's a little sad, but the upside of it is that moment in all of our lives, I think really helped us to not sweat the small stuff because you never know if you're going to wake up or you're going to have that loved one with you. And I mean, a moment's time, like she literally was going to go see him after church and he wasn't there. So,
and yeah. I think, you know, even though we joke around a lot about things on the podcast with our profession and just the silly things that happen in our own lives. It's nice every now and again to kind of just remind everyone that we are human too and take, you know, just a minute, tell people that you love them, give your parents a phone call or your kids a phone call or aunts, uncles, whatever, and just let them know that you like them.
Yeah, you know, that you find, you think they're all right.
Yeah, just a little
but
bit.
But you know, one thing that on Facebook that really takes me off ever since that day was when people put like FML, like F my life after things over like some trivial nonsense. And I don't know. It was that exact day because I remember the next day getting on Facebook and reading people's crap, you know, like the stuff like, the grocery store line was so long, FML. I was like, you have no right to say that. No right.
Yeah.
And it started from anger. And even though I'm not angry about it anymore, it still annoys me a little bit when I read like some things like that. I'm like, you get to go home and kiss your children. I don't think you should be saying FML. So yeah. I get a little about that sometimes. But oh. Yeah, did you catch that? I know.
The time when you actually said the word that we shouldn't say so much, that one.
Is that a word I can't say too?
I don't know. I'm gonna bleep it out just in case.
All right. Well, how about the next thing that you and I do is Google what I can say.
And then you want to just see how close to the line that you can get. Because I don't know if that's something that we should probably look into.
I either cross it or I don't. Got it.
Exactly. And then we can bleep it when it. And then just, I think we also need to change our rating for our whole entire podcast to explicit. Just to make it easier. And then sometimes there'll be a clean one and it'll be the oddball. So it'll be great.
Sometimes I'll behave myself. All right.
So, we got a new review on iTunes.
Really?
Yeah. This one is by Communications Pro. You want me to read it?
Yeah.
You remember how last week you're like, oh, wait until we get a 1-star?
I don't want to hear it. Don't read it if it's 1-star.
Oh, it's not. It's a 5-star. So thank you, Communications Pro. It says, if you are a hygienist, you have no excuse to not listen to the show because I am not one and never miss an episode. Oh. Andrew and Michelle have great chemistry and have lots of great topics to discuss each week.
Well, that's fantastic.
Isn't that nice?
That was very nice.
It says, and then the title was highly recommended. So.
Well, thanks.
Yeah.
Communication Pro.
We're climbing up slowly. I think we have nine reviews now.
Watch out.
Nine ratings and a couple of reviews. So listeners, please go to iTunes and rate and review us, please. That'd be great. It'll help other listeners to be able to find us. We've also changed some of the keywords for the search, so maybe that we can come up higher in the search for dental and dentistry and things like that soon. But your ratings and reviews will help that as well.
Yeah. Thanks for taking the time to do that, Andrew.
Yeah. Wait, do what?
Do read the it? Changing. No, the changing the keywords? Because I didn't do that.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Or just never mind. I don't even care.
I'm like, I haven't written a review for us yet. I'm really sorry. I'm too busy. I just can't do it. I went through every episode. So this is episode 16, right? So yep. I went through every episode and, added some keywords and I changed some of the titles and I found that I had added some of the show notes from before and I wrote in something like, I will add to this later and I never did. So I actually did do it. So those are updated. And so viewers, you can go back and listen or go back and read all the show notes and you can learn about some of your favorite people. And there's a bunch of links and stuff. So if you're bringing it up on your MacBook, you can click on the links. I think you probably click on them too. I think with an iPhone, but I don't have an iPhone, so I don't know how that works, but I would assume it's the same.
Oh, all right.
So yeah. So there's a bunch of really, really good information about all the interviews that we had. So excellent. Yay.
Yay. Mm-hmm. That's awesome.
Yeah.
So this interview that we had, well, I had, because you were not on this interview with Noelle Kelsch.
Can I apologize real quick about that? And also tell our listeners, you're welcome that I'm not on the episode.
Why?
But I don't know. I just feel like I don't think they care to listen to my voice ever.
Well, I'm pretty sure they don't want to hear my voice the whole time. So,
it's a good thing Noelle was on it then.
Yeah.
It's, but what happened was like we had scheduled this. How long had we scheduled this out? A long time, it felt like.
Yeah.
A month maybe. And so we had it scheduled out. And then, you know, my doctor called in sick to work one day. And then I had to go pick up an extra day, way up in Federal Way, which is we're exit 1 and they're exit 142. So 41 miles. And so, you were over on the West Coast this week, right? So didn't I call you in the morning and be like, hey,
that's like 5:30 on my way to the gym. You were on your way to work.
Yeah. So yeah, I was up at 3:30 that morning and then didn't get home till late 9 o'clock, something like that.
You're crazy. So. I still don't know how you do it.
Cha-ching, cha-ching. That's what I go for. So anyways, sorry. Let's talk about Noelle.
I could only be motivated that much by money until it affected my sleep. The moment anything affects my sleep, it is cut out of life.
It works. I don't know. Allison's okay with it, and as long as we pay the bills and get to have fun.
All good points. So, yeah. Anywho, I had an interview with Noelle, and it was while I was in the Tepi office, and it was so fun. I loved listening to it. I love OSHA. I love like CDC, like guidelines. I think infection control, even though it can be kind of a nuisance in our day to day because it will maybe make some task a little harder or take longer, it's still, if you think about the science of it and the reason behind it, you have to have it and you have to be doing it. And I find it really fun and interesting to learn new ways to implement things in the office, but I'm also a geek. So
yes,
yeah. So we talked about that, and we, the first part of our interview was actually a lot about the, association and her involvement with, CDHA, California Dental Hygiene Association, and, she's past president, and, she's on the board. She's actually, hopefully I remember this properly, advanced practitioner. I think HC, is it, RDH, like HP or AP?
Couldn't tell you.
Andrew, this is why I need you in these things, because I get excited and I listen to things, but I don't always retain all of it. So she is that, and she is also the RDH infection control columnist. So she's a wealth of knowledge, really.
And I've seen in one of the forums that I'm on that she was speaking, I think it was in Boston or something like that, about a month ago, 2 months ago. And a few of the people that attended it, that said it was a really, really nice class that they took. So
and
she's engaging as well as being informative.
Well, and who knows what you took it on, because she has like umpteen things that she talks on. She's also speaks on like palliative care for end of life oral care, and she actually has one of her personal stories that she talks about, something that she's going through. I won't give it away, but and the reason that she is so passionate about guidelines and infection control, because she is experiencing something from that. So it was a really fantastic interview. I'm sorry you couldn't be a part of that.
Yeah, me too. That sucks.
Well, but we definitely thank Noelle for being on the podcast. I know she's busy, and she's getting her master's degree right now from UCSF. So she's in the middle of writing her thesis. And if I can, I think I blocked out a lot of that time in my life because it was so stressful. But I kind of remember having a nervous breakdown, or just about having a nervous breakdown. So I really thank her for carving out some time for this podcast.
Yes. Thanks, Noelle. When you're listening, sorry.
Yes,
not if. I know you're going to listen to this because this is about you. So it's great. What else were we talking about? So, you know what? One thing that I would want to kind of address maybe to the listeners again is we usually give some information for you to contact the interviewees. But if you feel like you're like, oh, well, I'm just a nobody hygienist from Vancouver, Washington, Andrew, then I shouldn't be emailing them or whatever. Feel free to contact them through us. You guys kind of know us now. You guys listen to 16 episodes. Just go on the Facebook page and message us, and we'll get that message onto them. And I think that's it. Kind of, we're a little buffer system, so it'll take away some of the nervousness.
But truly, I don't think there is a single guest that we have had on that wouldn't welcome even the silliest, even if you find it so trivial or maybe just not even important, but you're just interested, you want to know something. I don't think we have one guest that would like be rude about that at all.
I agree. Yeah, we've had some pretty nice and welcoming guests. Very hospitable.
Yeah. Very hospitable. So, yeah. You got anything else?
I think that's it. Just go to our Facebook page, like the page. If you have any
Invite
questions,
your friends.
Let us know. We're almost to 500. We're going to have a giveaway. Ooh. We're going to do a, not for 500 though. We haven't decided which, maybe 750, maybe 1,000. But in these short I guess what would that be, 16 weeks or so of doing this, we've had almost 500 likes, and that's pretty incredible. So thank you very much for all of that. Tell your friends. Let's get us up to 500, and then we'll decide what kind of a giveaway we're going to do and for what number it should be.
Yep. So share the podcast too, the actual episode, because not everyone understands a podcast. So maybe let's start there. Tell your friends what a podcast is and when to listen to it and how to listen to it, and then share the episode, because I think sometimes people just see it and they're like, I don't know what to do with it. And I'm like, I listen to podcasts all the time, brushing my teeth or whatever. Like, I'm always listening to a podcast, walking through the airport, cleaning the house,
whatever. I put a video up on our page too, to kind of walk people through on how to download a podcast. So it should be, if you guys are concerned, just send them that way and they can look at it, and it's pretty easy. We'll keep putting it towards the top of our page so that it'll always kind of be fresh and current.
And I would say, if you have, put on Facebook how you listen to podcasts, or what do you do? When's your favorite time to listen to a podcast? Because we're going to make something from that.
Yeah. You know, some people, they listen to it on their web browser. And to me, that's weird. But then I look at our stats, and it's almost half of the people listen to it on their web browser. Even though it's an audio podcast, they just put it on their computer and they just play it while they're doing whatever they do.
Yeah.
So interesting. Very interesting to me.
Yeah. So share that with us. Tell us how you listen to your podcast. What activity are you doing while listening?
Maybe. So what do you have coming up, Michelle?
What do I have? Actually, I am home for 2 whole weeks.
What are you going to do with yourself?
I don't know. Catch up, see my nephews. I FaceTimed them when I was in the airport in Atlanta. And my one nephew, he was like, Auntie, I miss you. And I was like, could you break a girl's heart? My God. All right. Think of something really fun, and we're going to do that as soon as I get back. So
nice.
And see my little boys and finish my renovations that have been put on hold, and, you know, just handle life. Oh, see my boyfriend. He just did a little throat clearing. I don't know if you heard that in the background.
I didn't, but I'm not surprised.
Yeah.
Poor guy.
Yeah, poor guy. So, and then I will be going out to Seattle April 8th and 9th. So you and I are going to try to get together then.
Yeah. And the reason why we're going to meet up is
I'm going to be out there with Susan Wingrove.
Yes.
One of her things. She does like a 2-day course. Well, 1 day in one city, then drives to another city that about an hour away and does the same course. So if you're in the area, you could probably find one of those courses near you. And then I will actually, I'm speaking at Western Society of Periodontology in Scottsdale. So if you are a periodontist or in a perio office in Scottsdale, come see me speak at, I think it's April 2nd on, maintaining implants and making maintenance as a cornerstone of implant therapy.
That's a mouthful, by the way.
Yep. I barely got it out.
So that's after Susan.
April 2nd is that. Then I'm going to Seattle April 8th and 9th. Then I actually fly back down to California. I'm in California that following week. And then I come back up to Seattle to Washington State Dental Hygiene Meeting. April what?
Yes.
April.
The next weekend, whatever that makes it. So the 16th, 17th, something like that.
Crap. I remembered I made plans here in Charleston. I'm not going to be here.
Mm. Oh, well, yeah. Better cancel those plans. Anyway, so I think we're going to try and meet up one after Susan's. I'm not sure if I'm available that weekend, but after Susan gives one of her seminars, we'll talk. And then maybe the next weekend, we'll probably try and meet up again. So if listeners, you guys want to hang out with us, then message us. Let us know. We'll try and maybe put together a dinner or something.
Oh, that'd be fun.
It'd be a lot of fun.
All right.
All right. Well, let's throw the episode. I hope you guys really enjoy this episode with Noelle Kelch.
Thanks. I could keep going, but what I really wanted to talk to you, well, first, I think we should tell our listeners who you are, because I'm sure they've heard your name, Noelle Kelch. Am I saying that right?
You sure are.
K-E-L-S-C-H. So actually, Noelle, and I go back a while, but without probably even understanding that we go, like, just in moments of emailing. Do you remember my first email to you was, for you to look over my first article in RDH?
Absolutely, I do.
Yes. That was such a big help. So you were like a mentor to me before you even probably realized who I was or that, I was like a newbie writer.
Michelle, one of the most exciting things for me is when someone looks outside of their normal practice and tries to strive to do something beyond the norm. I loved what you wrote. I loved what you put together. And if I can be an advocate to help anybody take it to the next level, I'm here to help.
Well, I think you're just a perfect example of the mentorship that hygiene and hygienists need, and that there are some people out there, if you just ask, are willing to be your mentor and help you in your progression. So I wrote my thesis research for my master's degree was on interdisciplinary collaboration in the ICUs and the need for hygienists to be on the floor performing oral health for those critical care patients. And I just took a section out of it and wrote it up for RDH magazine. And my buddy RJ Toman at Kerr said, I think I have somebody that would help you, because I was so nervous about it being published and if it was even readable. So
you
were such a important and just mind calming person in that moment, because it was a scary step to take. And so the one thing that Andrew and I like to tell the listeners about is the journey. And people will ask, like, well, how are you doing the things you're doing now? And I like to make sure they all understand that it was not like an overnight accomplishment, or you know, I didn't get anything that I have or any writing articles or publishing overnight. Like, it took months and years and being very nervous and like unsure. But it comes. And so I think your journey is something that is also fascinating, because you are kind of all over the place. So you are an international speaker. You're a hygienist. Now you're this advanced practitioner, correct? Is that right?
Correct. AP?
So kind of just,
alternative practice is what it stands for.
Alternative practice. So let's start at square one. You're a hygienist. When did you start, and were you practicing primarily in clinical?
Well, I actually started as an assistant in 1976 when I was in high school, and then went on to become an RDH in 1992. And then from there, got my AP back in, I think it was 2006. And then now here I am doing what I'm doing. I will say two things. Mm-hmm. When you have an interest and you have a passion about something, something happened to me in the office one day. I was playing with a bib chain. And you know how you take it to lunch with you and you put a bib on you, and then you go, oh my gosh, I got stuff all over me at lunch. If I need to wear a bib. So I had taken it into the lunchroom. I was playing with it. And as I was playing with it, stuff fell out of it. It was one of those chainy ones. It was disgusting.
Oh my God.
Well, I had been wearing a young lady, her name's Becky Griswold, at the college, at Oxnard College. And I asked her, would you be willing to do a study on this? So the college, the girls, two of the girls, did a little study. Well, part of it worked, part of it was not complete. So I decided, hey, I went to college. I know how to do a study. I will do my own study. So I collected bib chains from offices, put them in sterile water one at a time, auger plated them out, and discovered what was inside of a bib clip. From there, I wrote an article for RDH magazine. I was the infection control columnist at that point. And the article got picked up nationally and internationally. 7 universities have now repeated that study and found even more bacteria than I found in my study. The level of cross-contamination from a bib clip that hasn't been processed properly, the more surface you've got on it, like with a chain, the more likely you are to have bacteria. And we get a damp environment when we're using the Cavitron. We move the bib. We touch that chain. We could be cross-contaminating. Some companies even came up with products as a result of the little tiny study that I did. And I can't tell you how many of you have ideas and thoughts out there. How many of you could be impacting where hygiene goes just by moving forward with something as simple as getting an auger plate and putting together your own little study. Now, do I think it's important that my study went to the university level? I believe that it has to be repeated by a university because I could be prejudiced. And I am against bib chains. None of them are touching my neck. I can guarantee you that. The way that I started writing is I had written a few things, seen some things, and I, like you, went to someone else. I went to Anne Guion, and I asked her to look at it and see what she thought. And she gave me some ideas. I tweaked it a bit, sent it into Mark Hartley. A month later, I'm the infection control columnist for RDH Magazine. And what a great journey that's been. You know, my biggest thing with becoming an infection control columnist is not only that I want to keep you safe, Michelle, when you go work in the dental environment, I want you to be able to go home at the end of the day either healthier or as healthy as when you started the day, which means you're going to have to make some sacrifices, and I can guarantee that. The second thing that I want, and this is one of my biggest pushes, you know, we have not empowered patients. We have not empowered patients to be as aware as they would be in a medical setting. And I want that patient to go home healthy and reassured that they are in a safe environment. And my master's, Michelle, right now that I'm working on, I'm looking at the practices of dental hygienists who are in states that have infection control requirement for CE, continuing education, and states that don't require CEs, and comparing and contrasting the two. One of the really, I almost want to say devastating things that I've learned out of that when I did the study is that only 26% of hygienists are sterilizing their hand pieces between patients. Now, we were told in 1989, and then again in 93, and then again in 98, 2003, it's been stated over and over and over again. Chris Miller did an incredible study where he looked at, can bacteria get into the gears and the motor and come out through the prophy angle? And he was able to prove that they can, and I'll encourage all of you to go on to OSAP, O-S-A-P. OSAP is the Organization for Safety and Asepsis Procedures, which every single healthcare provider should belong to because it gives us the tools that we need to stay safe and keep our patients safe. Chris has got a whole somebody asks a question on there, and his study is on there. All of us are required to do that between patients, and I can't tell you how many people have said, so-and-so won't let me, or I can't because there's not enough hand pieces. This is the cost of doing business. So one of the things that I've done the last few years, which some people don't like very much, and that's okay, is I've empowered patients to start asking questions, to ask for a disposable bib clip or a bib clip that's autoclaved, to ask if the handpiece is being sterilized, to watch you open your envelope in front of them, to watch you wash your hands if there's any debris on your hands before patients and after patients. We've got a responsibility here, and some people don't like it. It's not a question anymore, though. I am really excited because in the next couple of weeks, the Center for Disease Control is going to be giving us a fantastic checklist for all of us to be going off of to reassure patients, to reassure ourselves that we're keeping everyone safe in this environment. There are so many stories that I could share with you, and there's two that I'd like to share right now. And
sure, one please.
I got a call one day from a young lady, and her name's Jen, and she had have you had her on your show, Michelle?
No.
Jen called me because she was trying to find anywhere in CDC guidelines or any guidelines where it said the patient had to wear eye protection. And I explained to her that it's not in there. The only thing it says is in frequently asked questions at the CDC, it says that you might want to offer your patients safety glasses. Now, just because it's not a law, mm-hmm. just because it's not required, doesn't mean we shouldn't be doing it. We have to do what are called best practices. That means that you take all the rules and regulations, all the studies you've seen, and you use your clinical expertise to do what's right. At the end of the day, that's very important. For Jen, it was very, very important because she went into a dentist. She sat down in the chair. She was thinking about her kids and her grocery list and everything else. And I'm going to tell you quickly that a few human errors went into practice. A needle was passed over her face and dropped into her eye. Normally, it would take someone immediately to the eye wash station, flush out their eye, send them to the hospital, get it assessed, because bacteria, when we do an injection, can go into the eye. Well, that didn't happen, and she didn't receive services till much later in the day when the anesthetic wore off that had been injected into her eye. She lost her retina. She now has what is called Jen's Vision, which is an advocacy program to get every healthcare provider in the dental setting to please put ANSI-approved eyewear on your patient. That drill that's spinning, spinning, spinning is going up to 50 miles an hour. And if something flicks off of it and goes into your eye or the patient's eye, you could be putting someone's in harm's way. So those best practices, looking at your environment, saying, here's what I really, really need to be doing. Today, before you and I talked, I just came back from my doctor's office, and I told you I started dentistry in 1976. We didn't wear gloves. We didn't wear a mask. We had those lovely polyester uniforms and nurse's shoes, but I can tell you that I have put my hands in places that I never should have had my hands in, including this cold sterile, because that's what we used to do, and I live to tell about it. But today is one of those days that I am reminded, because I had to go to my head and neck specialist. And you might be thinking, why? Why would she need to go to a head and neck specialist? Well, it's a year and a half ago, I had to go to NIH for a study that was being done on people with a genetic disease. I went through the study, and they did a bunch of testing. In the testing, what we discovered was that I had something in my sinus. So I had to go to the doctor and get that something removed. What that was an inverted sclerodian papilloma of the sphenoid sinus. Now, I got to tell you, I'm pretty blessed, because normally it would be in the maxillary sinus. They would cut your head open, flap everything back, take all the mucous membrane out of the sphenoid sinus, because this is a disease that reoccurs at about a 70% rate. Wow. I'm having to go to the doctor for the first year and a half, for every 6 to 8 weeks, to check to see if it's going to reoccur. But mine was in the sphenoid sinus, so they were able to go in, trim the bone out, get everything out, and we're praying that things don't go in any other direction. But I'll be doing this for the next 5 years. Well, when I went into this doctor, he said to me, what do you do for a living? And I said, I'm a hygienist. He goes, this doesn't make sense. This does not, I don't know why you ended up with this. And he said, it's usually gynecologists who are using a laser and are not wearing their mask properly, or are not using high volume suction, or a combination of the two. And I said, well, guess what? I've been using a laser for over 10 years. And am I perfect with my mask? Sometimes. Do I change it every 20 minutes if it's moist? Maybe not. Do I always have the high volume suction going when I'm using the laser? Sometimes I don't have an assistant. Sometimes I do. I want you guys to go home safe at the end of the day, Michelle. And that means the cost of doing business means that I have to have high volume suction on, that I either have to be wearing the proper mask or I can't do the procedure. And that's where this all comes into play. That's what I'm talking about here. That's how we empower people. It's not just what the CDC says or the EPA says or FDA says or following the directions. It has to do with each one of us taking the time to look at best practices that fall into these categories.
Wow.
I'm going to be okay, Michelle. I am. I'm not going to be in that 70% statistic because the person that did my surgery was absolutely amazing and knows what he's doing and has been my greatest advocate. I have learned so much from him each time I go in. This is not a common disease, but it is something that is a risk for all of us. The human papillomavirus, we know it can be passed through a plume, and a laser plume is one of those areas.
I'm a little speechless. To go from the story with the eye, which I think I'm still kind of working out in my head, my God, she got poked in the eye with a needle, to your story, to hear this, that, you know, I'm kind of speechless, like, but it definitely shows where your passion comes from, because not only are you passionate about the advocacy of the patient because you are now a patient in another clinic, but you're also an advocate because as a hygienist, this is where you obtained this disease. I mean, that's just...
You know, Michelle, we will never be able to say where I obtained this disease.
Right.
The probability of where I obtained this disease, I need to correct that for sure. Can we ever say where someone absolutely got human papillomavirus? Probably not.
Probably
never know where that came from. The probability of me getting it from a laser when it's been very prominent with gynecologists? Yeah. We need to be looking at this. We need to, you know, on September 15th this past year, we all got a message from the CDC and FDA that we have to, number one, read the instructions for use for every item that we're using, whether it's the sterilizer, whether it's the curing light, whether it's the laser. Then we have to make sure everybody in the office is following all those directions. And somebody's supposed to be in charge of that for the office. We can't go on the internet and on Facebook and go, does the plastic go up or the plastic go down? We have to read the directions that come with the unit. It takes time. It takes training. That we have created our own medical environment. And I have to say, there's some offices that are doing an incredible, incredible job. And yet, there are offices that don't get the risks involved. They don't read the IFU that says, if you're using a curing light, you have to put protective lenses on your patient. I don't care if you're using a shield or you're not using a shield. The patient's face is on the other side of that curing light. And if you pull it out and it's still on, you could impact the patient. Is it going to make them blind automatically? No, but over time, it could be a contributing factor. Each of us has a responsibility.
Well, I think you bring up a really good point and something that has been kind of irking me a little bit about the way that we are using Facebook to obtain our knowledge about certain things like this. Because I see questions all the time on Facebook, and sometimes I think to myself, wouldn't that have been easier to Google to get a scholar, like, or an evidence-based research study or the information from the product and the company itself? Wouldn't that have been a quicker, more accurate way than to then go through all the comments about, I do this, I do that, I do this? And some of them might be correct, but a lot of them are anecdotal and not really the right practice. So I think when you, say we have a responsibility as clinicians to be going through all of our products and procedures and looking to make sure that we are following the appropriate protocol and the recommendations and being advocates for ourselves and for the patient. So when we hear these things from dentists forcing us to clock out because we don't have a patient, or people are like, I got to do recall and I hate doing recall, or, you know, what do I do? He won't let me stay late. He won't let me come early. This would be a way to maybe bring up something else that could be done in the office during those times.
It is something else that can be done in the office, but we need to go back to federal law. Federal law, federal OSHA training includes IFUs, instructions for use. So federal OSHA training is required yearly, not every other year, not every 5 years, not every 4 years. It is required yearly. If you don't know the directions to a product, that should be done on during staff time, during training, whether it's during morning huddle, whether you set aside an hour a month. You know, I want to go back, though, to what Facebook is. Facebook is opinion. There is no place for opinion in IFUs, instructions for use. There's no place for it all. Let's just take a simple thing, an EPA-approved hospital-grade disinfectant. You look at the label, and what does the first thing say? Off-label use of this product is against the law. Yet in my survey, I have 16% of people in the United States taking 2x2s, putting them in a jar, pouring disinfectant over it. The bleach and the disinfectant can render the 2x2, the bleach and the 2x2 can render the disinfectant inert, and there's several studies that look at that. So you're not following the label directions if you're doing that. I've yet to see a package that says that. The second thing that falls into this category is what I saw happen the other day. Somebody asked, does the paper go up or the plastic go down on an item? 13 people responded. 11 of those were wrong because they didn't read the IFU for the unit that she was talking about. Every unit that you get, if you go to the back of it, it'll have the serial number or on the bottom of it someplace. You go online. You put, I need the instructions for use for whatever it is, and the serial number.
MagnaClay, whatever. Yeah.
I don't care which one it is.
Yeah, just put it in there.
Exactly. It will come up. If you don't find it, the manufacturer will come up, and you can call them. Here's my caution there. Do not ask the person on the phone to give you the answer that's answering the phone. Ask for the IFU and read it yourself. There is no place for opinion. We have to have the specifics, and we have to have it there to train with.
So I guess I would have to say then to make sure that all of our listeners, they kind of reassess their day, that it should not be clocking in, clocking out, seeing the patients, going home. You get kind of overwhelmed by your day. You're pissed off at your doctor. You're fussing with your assistants. You should all come together as a team to really reassess your OSHA protocols and the IFUs, that understanding each part of the office, all of your products, making sure everyone's on the same page, that it's time to get serious about this, that it's not just, you know, oh, I went to this office and they did a really good job of it, and the next office that I temp at doesn't. Well, maybe you should be the change advocate for that office.
Absolutely. I think a great example is I went into an office the other day and they were using the FDA-approved medical device, which is a paper that you wrap your cassettes in. Perfect. I walked in and they're using one piece of paper. And I said, have you read the instructions for use? And she said, yeah, it's posted right here. And I said, could you read it to me? She read it to me, and she discovered that there's supposed to be two pieces of paper, one that is the outside that is dirty and one that is the inside that is clean for when you're doing a surgical procedure. If you don't read the IFU, you won't know if you're right or wrong, and that's where your responsibility comes in. That's where keeping people out of harm's way, Jen's story, my story, whosever story it is, how I have done this in offices and in my own private practice is we do what is called 1 minute in the morning. And 1 minute in the morning just means when we have our morning huddle, one person, we go around the room, and let's say it's Monday and it's Noelle's turn, Tuesday is Tom's turn, Wednesday is Fred's turn, whoever. On Monday, I would come in and I would say something like, oh, I heard this really weird lady talking on infection control, and she said 88% of disease is spread through hand-to-hand contact. Let's remember and remind each other to wash our hands together today. And in my practice, we have a signal that so patients won't know that we're saying wash your hands, but that we know that we're protecting each other. And that signal is just to rub our hands together like this. And no patient knows what you're doing. They think that you're getting ready for practice or stretching your hands. I don't care what it is. if you start doing that and you do it every single day, you will stay up to date on things. If you start breaking those IFUs down to simple, easy to use concepts where you train the entire office, anybody that's touching a device should know the IFU behind it. We just want everyone to go home healthy at the end of the day.
I think there's a lot of pearls from our little conversation today, but I think the other one would be, one, you should be having huddles in the morning. I work for an office, or I temped an office just recently that didn't do huddles, and I felt so discombobulated to start my morning. Like, it was like fly in the door, throw my stuff down, get the office ready. I'm like trying to look through my charts and stuff. Now, granted, the front desk did a very good job of checking to see who needs x-rays and fluoride and insurance and whatever, all the little things. But a morning huddle can be so much more than what are the patients that we're seeing today? Like, who, does Susie Q have any untreated treatment on her treatment plan? It's things like what you just discussed, and that's great. I mean, that's what keeps an office as a team, and that's what keeps you out of harm's way and make you advocates for the patient and yourself.
And I agree with you completely, and I think this whole thing is that at the end of all of this, if we just do one simple thing, one simple change, and maybe getting enough hand pieces so that we can sterilize them between patients. I no longer stick my hand in the cold sterile, nor do I have a cold sterile anymore. I no longer would put my hands in a patient's mouth, yet how many are not following OSHA's guidelines to wear utility gloves when they touch chemicals or touch sharps? That's for every single state. There is no reason for patient exam gloves in the sterilization area, because you're not examining patients in the sterilization area. I want to keep you safe. I want to keep the consumer safe. And that's what it all comes down to, Michelle.
Well, I don't want to keep you any longer than I have to, because I feel like I could just sit and talk with you for days about all this information. You're a wealth of knowledge. And I would also like to tell everybody to head to your website, which is noellekelsch.com. And then I look under courses, because you have a ton of courses. Like, I just want to quickly read some of them, because I pretty much read them and was like, I want to go to that one. I want to go to that one. I would like to see that one. Let's see, infection control with a twist, infection control hand hygiene, serving clients facing end of life, oral comfort care, which I am fascinated by, eliminating the boxed thinking, which you and I, we touched on earlier, mental health and oral health, the dental professional's approach to addictive behavior, serving underserved populations, which I'm really sad that Andrew's not on here, because he and I both love doing charitable dentistry and seeing the underserved populations, understanding HIV, AIDS, and developing a treatment protocol, collaborative care, implant maintenance, and the team approach, and then understanding balance and probiotics, which I really want to learn more about that. So you run the gamut with education and courses. You are a delight to talk to, because you are just obviously passionate. Is there any upcoming events that we can tell our listeners to look for you or attend, or anything we can plug for you?
At this point, I'm finishing my master's for the next 2 months, but I'll see everyone at Under One Roof. I'm hoping that we get a really good turnout for our course on treating patients and empowering patients with cancer. We're not just looking at oral cancer. We're giving you a treatment protocol for that patient that sits in your chair. You'll go home with 10 kits in order to be able to serve those clients. We have an incredible speaker coming in that is the director of the cancer program at University of Pennsylvania, and she's going to be giving us some great tools. We've got two hygienists coming in that have survived cancer and are able to tell us their journey through the process. I think this is really important. I think it's great that we have a lot going on with oral cancer, but so many times people are look like deer in the headlights when they give me a call and someone comes in that they have no idea what to do for someone who is experiencing cancer and how to get them the treatment protocol that they need.
Wow. Yeah, so if you're at Under One Roof, you should be at that meeting. Andrew and I will both be at Under One Roof, but I will be exhibiting with Tepe, so I'm going to try to sneak in and see if I can listen to some of these lectures, because that sounds fascinating. I thank you for your time. I know that this was kind of a long time coming back and forth, but I really appreciate you being on here, because I think that our listeners will take so many pearls from this and hopefully start to be or implement them into their practice. Even it's just, I just spoke with Carrie Iverson, yesterday, and
she's an amazing lady.
And Andrew and I say this with the podcast all the time, and it's going to become such, like, listeners are going to block us out, but we meet some incredible people and people who just really ignite a fire and get our wheels spinning too. And Andrew and I don't sit still very much. Our wheels are always spinning. So that says a lot about the people who are on this podcast and the guests that we've had. But she said yesterday that, you know, there's these keystone habits and maybe it just takes one little change. And from that, you feel the results, you see the effects, and then you strive to make other changes. And I think that that's huge. So maybe you go in saying, no, I'm not going to use exam gloves and sterilization anymore. I'm going to start using my utility gloves that are probably just hanging up there. So if you do get a visit from OSHA, you pass, but you're not actually using them. Maybe it's just that one thing.
And that one little thing can make a huge difference. And the thing that I have to say is, don't do it out of fear. Do it because it's the right thing to do. Do it because you know best practices. You're a clinician. And I think about these men and women who are dipping their hands in a disinfectant, which the EPA calls a pesticide, all day long. And when you read the label, it says it affects your kidney and liver. It says it's not something you're supposed to be touching. And yet they're wearing a glove that wasn't designed to touch chemicals. And it is penetrating that glove. We have to start making the sacrifice. It's not convenient to do some of the things that we have to do.
So true. That's so true. Thanks, Noelle. This is great.
Thank you.
So,
have a great day.
No, and everybody, I encourage you to check out noellekelsch.com, and we'll see you next week.
Yeah, bye-bye.
Bye.
You didn't flip me off once that time.
I feel like I'm very calm today. Can you feel my calmness?
Mm-hmm.
You didn't give me a reason to flip you off, so.
If you don't
start
none,
there won't
zen.
Be none. Don't right. Start none, won't be none.